Hello, I am here tonight with the developers of Stomp. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Joel Garcia, producer of Stomp.
Nathan McLean, the programmer.
Hi, I'm Leah Jennings. I am asset artist and concept artist.
All right, glad to meet
General.
you all. Stomp is a fun little game where you get to create a lot of havoc, a lot of destruction, always fun. But it's also centered around gaining high scores, crushing as much stuff as possible without blowing up. So I wanted to ask, how can players improve in Stomp? Which is to say, what aspects of Stomp can the player influence and what else is beyond their control?
All right, so players can influence the movements of their monsters. Because this game is centered around tracking players as they walk, if they travel long distances quickly in the game space within the constraints of the Kinect's view, they'll be able to destroy more buildings and, of course, gain higher scores. Now, they can also impact their reflexes through each playthrough. So, of course, if they practice, they become quicker. One element that they have no control over is the randomly generated buildings. Nathan can definitely cover this topic.
Yeah, so Nathan, is there any, what is the method behind the building's generation? Is it purely random, or is there like a sense of level design?
Well, there is a sense of level design. What I did in designing the basics of Stomp was to create prefabs in Unity that are just placeholders. So any of our designers can then place a placeholder anywhere on the map. And once those placeholders are set, there's a script that runs through that randomly generates a different building tile each time the game is run. We use a similar one for generating the towers and the gas stations. So it randomly generates between the gas station and the towers that you collect to become a mega kaiju.
And there must be some algorithm behind the scenes so that certain types of buildings appear in appropriate proportion.
Correct. Well, right now the algorithm goes through about 10 different buildings as well as two park tiles. We're hoping to expand that at some point in time, but and kind of use different randomization on where they are within the scene. But for right now, just as a proof of concept, it's going through every type of building we have for that level. And then on the next level, we're using a different set of buildings, but still it's 10 with the two others. And that's what it goes through to generate each building tile.
Okay. So you mentioned that there are different types of building tiles per level. Do they behave any differently? Would the player come up with different strategies based on the level?
We're still working on the logic for that and how to present to a player like almost like a shopping list of buildings that you need to collect for different things to happen. And that would go into our future designs for different power-ups for the kaiju, different types of, like right now it's just the mega, but also we plan on possibly adding beams or different types of additions that you can get for limited time with the kaiju if you collect certain building types. And of course that list on the side will change to show which buildings you need to collect and how many you need to collect to get a certain power up.
Okay. And Joel, you had mentioned that players could get better at the game by improving their reflexes. I was wondering how much variety you've seen in player performance based off of just their ability to get around the real-world space.
At Gamescape alone, we saw plenty of variety. I mean, we had kids come in, like hopping back and forth between the game space, and then every now and then we had like some adults try out the game, and some of them would get it, and then like you had a couple who were like really, really cautious, like walking bit by bit just to see what their kaiju would do on screen. And then we had like a really, really cool playthrough done by a guy on crutches. He moved slowly, but he was able to like cover a lot of ground on each map.
Has there been one type of movement that has been more successful than others, or does everyone generally find their own way to success?
What do you think, guys?
Well, what I noticed, because this was really one of our first public trials, so before this, it's just been us testing the game. And, of course, we knew the limitations of the game, so we would move completely throughout it. I know we noticed that some users would get right into it and move around the whole space, but others would just kind of stand there and not know what was going on. So we're thinking about building a tutorial type stage that kind of gets people used to moving around in that actual space and showing that it actually moves your character around the virtual space. But I think we got a lot of good data this past weekend on how users play.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
Kind of interesting how, people actually need to figure out how to move in this space. And one thing we didn't realize maybe since we're used to playing it is that you kind of need to teach someone how to move in this space. Because people are usually start off maybe waving their arms or stomping their feet up and down. And we have to physically show them you can walk from side to side or forward and backward. And then they kind of slowly, the light bulb turns on and they figure out what they are allowed to do in the game, and then maybe how to strategize better or like how to move more successfully. And I think there is some variety to the types of patterns that people can use to play, but it's there's a lot of similarity. Basically, you want to have full range of motion, and I think we do want to increase the sensitivity so you can control the monster a little bit more and not get lost on screen. Yeah, a lot of good data over the weekend, a lot of different people doing it different ways.
Nice. Yeah, it does seem like it would be tricky conveying the mapping of real world space to game space. You know, we kind of just understand how a joystick works. That's been around for several decades now, but using your body as a game controller is not something we are terribly used to.
No, I don't. I think it's something that definitely takes a little getting used to. The people I saw using it the most and the most, like, the way we envision, were the younger kids, because they would just, once they realized that they were being followed around on the screen by this monster, they just took to it and were moving everywhere, almost running into people that weren't in the game.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. You guys remember these three kids? One about, I guess, like 7 or 8, and then his two younger siblings. The oldest brother stood in the center of the game space, and the youngest siblings just ran around him like a merry-go-round. I believe they achieved 2,800 points through their playthrough. So they definitely grasped the concept of coverage and moving quickly around the map.
I was also curious, among your development staff, who has been the most successful playing the game?
Playing the game? Oh, okay.
Who's gotten the high score?
What you meant. Okay.
I don't know that I've actually played for a high score before, just to make sure that everything was working. It's always been a matter of making sure that the kaiju showed up on screen, the buildings, when they were destroyed, that they actually calculated upright, and then that the mega was actually working correctly. I don't know, did either of you all ever play in testing for a high score?
Yeah, I know I beat Hero's score on Saturday.
Jeremy.
Yeah.
Jeremy was... He's a recent person that joined our team. He may be helping us out with like sound effects and music and such, and even voiceovers. But he gained a total of about 2,900 points, I believe, through one playthrough of both levels.
All right. Oh. I was also continuing about the development staff. I was wondering, how much do team roles bleed together? Do you often have the programmer giving opinion on the graphics, or the graphics person giving opinion about how the game plays?
I think Leia would be good at covering this portion of the conversation.
I think probably Joelle is the most interdisciplinary member on the team right now, because since he's the producer, he sort of has his hands in each of the things that we're doing, and is also has a wide variety of skills that he's been able to help with sort of filling in wherever we need. So he's helped me with the animation, and he's done the level design, and I believe he's also familiar with the coding. Whereas the artists are more segregated, where we sort of have our own email threads and we just focus on the art stuff, and the programmers mostly focus on the programming, especially since now that we have 3-4 artists, we try to not bother the programmers too much. So we'll have some kind of like separate art meetings, and then maybe for a big meeting, we'll all get together and just sort of check with everyone, like, does this look good to you? If that makes sense.
Okay. So yeah. It sounds like maybe the artists do a lot of talking amongst each other, and the programmers might talk amongst each other a whole lot, but there's not a lot of discussion between the two groups aside from when things come together.
Well, I mean, I know that I talk with Leah and Joelle a lot when it comes to things that I'm noticing during the design or during the programming process that would help visually express what we have going on. Didn't say it's a huge dialogue, but definitely just the conversation of, you know, what looks good with the buildings, how they're just, you know, what we need as far as them looking, how they look intact, and then how they look when they're destroyed. I know we all went through a bit while we were getting the kaiju actually built. And then knowing that, you know, we're taking those gifts and putting them, or taking those images and putting them actually into Unity. There's a small process in that. And if there's something a little bit off, I know we talk about that back and forth as well. I mean, definitely. It's just because it's so seamless, especially with Joelle having his hands kind of in both areas, it usually goes so smoothly that we don't even notice it. But definitely with the things that Joelle does as far as animation and prototyping, it's been a huge help. And that's helped us to be able to isolate ourselves within programming or within art to be able to maximize what we can do.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's a kind of a combination. Everyone has their own roles, but we're also constantly looking to each other for feedback, because we really have to be like a cohesive unit, because if I make a piece of art that doesn't, like, can't be programmed, then it's useless. So Joelle has been like trying to make sure that everybody's on the same page as much as possible, and that's been really good.
All right, so I do completely agree with both Nathan and Leia. We do have our times where we're segregated and we work individually on our own tasks, but then we come together and put together a playable build so that we can make sure it's refined from all ends. And then we also give each other feedback when necessary. I recall there were times where Jillian Walker, the artist behind our logo, basically emailed everyone on our team to see what they thought about the logo. Throughout a couple of weeks, she got a lot of feedback from the team, both programmers and artists, and she formed this logo that I feel definitely captures the essence of the game, breaking stuff. And then there's this other example where Leia personally went over to Nathan to see whether or not he felt that the building sprites that she was making would fit into the game. He was excited to tell her, yes, they're bright and colorful, they're simple in detail, yet they're distinct enough for players to recognize. He also went ahead and said that they would also captivate the audience that he felt we could go for, kids primarily. So I feel as though we work together in such a way where we do create like this intricate web that is transparent sometimes. But it isn't only transparent because of, like, the fact that I am jumping in between different areas of the game. But it's also transparent because everyone's willing to communicate and also work together and be flexible with each other. The Mega is a primary example of that. That was both the idea of an artist and a programmer. I'll give the programming portion to Nathan, since he had originally conceived that we should, like, create, like, this mechanic of Omega by just increasing the size of the Kaiju. And then Leia, I'll give her the credit, mainly because she, for the art end of it, since she was the one that thought that it would be good to give players a visual indicator by providing a Kaiju that changes visually with more detail and a different animation. So I really have to thank the team as a whole, Jillian Walker, Nathan McLean, Leia Jennings, Hiroshi Butler, and every one of the new members that have recently joined. I feel like you guys work together very well, mainly because you guys communicate, and also because you're willing to be flexible with one another. Thank you.
Nice. It sounds like you're a well-oiled machine.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Over the world.
So one last question, just more of a conceptual question I wanted to run by each of you individually. Joel, could you tell me, when it comes to game design, which is more important? The game itself, the intention of the developer, or the experience of the player?
I feel to a certain extent that each of those things is important. There are games out there that are made specifically for players to have fun with and do whatever they want with, like, you know, Saints Row, for example, has, like, this gigantic world with so many different, like, means of interaction. And even something like Kirby 64, a platformer that allows you to mix and match power-ups. I feel like those focus in on user experience. And then, like, you have other games that are about getting some sort of concept across. Like, for example, Papers, Please. Papers, Please, I feel, is a commentary on immigration. I personally, as a game designer, would love to mesh with those two things. I would like to create games that are focused on passing along theories and concepts that I have, and any commentary I have about this world. And also, I'd like to create games that are based on the user experience. So if I were to, like, set up some sort of hierarchy, maybe, for example, depending on what I'm aiming to do, what my concept is, perhaps I would make a game that is 25% my concept in theory, and then 75% gameplay and fun.
So it's that idea of a clean end-to-end communication where the player successfully receives the thought imparted by the designer.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, and of course, they also have fun. Like, there has to be a point where, like, either they're having a really good time, or the design is set up in such a way where, like, I guess they walk away with something else. Like, I know that not all games have to be fun. Not all of them have to be happy. There can be sad moments. There can be moments that get you angry. I mean, like, Bioshock Infinite is an example where, like, that gameplay focuses on tense moments where it isn't really about happiness. If like, you focus in on, like, you know, the gameplay itself, like, you know, the action-oriented shooting here and there, FPS stuff.
I think... you might say, yes. Engaging rather than fun.
Yes, that would be a better term to use, actually.
Okay. Nathan, when it comes to game design, which is more important, the game itself, the developer, or the experience of the player?
The experience of the player, for me, is always at the top of my list. Wanting to make sure that the player is engaged, as you said earlier, but also making sure that we're taking care of the player's needs as we're designing the game, because first of all, without having a player, you don't have a game. And I know that just this past weekend had opened my eyes to a lot of areas that we can focus on to tighten up the game and get a better feel for what players want out of the game, not necessarily just what we want, Now, design-wise, I also feel like Joel does as far as giving the players a certain feel when they're playing the game. So, like, while a lot of the ideas I definitely took to heart this weekend, there's some things that just are outside of the realm of what we wanted to do with this game, while others are definitely things that we're looking at including in the game so that we can kind of make it something that the players feel is theirs and they're in the game and they're enjoying the world versus a strict, this is our experience, this is what we want you to do, and, you know, don't deviate from that. I definitely like the concept of games like Minecraft and Grand Theft Auto where the game is designed to let the player use their imagination in how they play. Now, this game doesn't completely lend itself to that, but it does give us some area to play with as far as adding different difficulty levels and different things to get players up and moving about and just enjoying the game in general.
Sure. You might even say, you know, the Kinect itself is a method of expression that allows, you know, for a more individual touch than a joystick could.
Yes.
So it sounds like, as a designer, you're concerned with creating expressive experiences, a world in which a player could gain a sense of identity, or at least display a sense of identity.
Yes. That's one of the things I found exciting about this past weekend is seeing how people really just got into it. And the whole, look at me, I'm moving around and it's doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. And Leah, when it comes to game design, which is more important, the game itself, the developer, or the player?
So I think I'm going to answer this on how I feel about design in general, maybe not necessarily for this game, but I think that the experience of the game is really the residue or the artifact of the game. That's the only way the game really exists, is through being experienced by the player. But as a designer, you can't specifically engineer an experience. All you can do is sort of provide the substrate or the playground in which someone else can generate their own experience. You can kind of guide someone into the type of experience, but that's going to be really up to the individual. And I think, but at the same time, it can't exist without the designer. And I think coming from the background of an artist, like a fine artist, we really value having a very specific, personal kind of nugget of an idea or a feeling or an experience, and then expressing that into whatever you're doing. And it can't, and it's not necessarily even can be defined by specific mechanics. Like, is it open world or is it very scripted? It's really just a feeling that you impart on the people that are playing it. So I think it's really kind of ephemeral for me, and it's a matter of trial and error. Yeah. That's my very complicated answer to that question.
Yeah, gameplay has always struck me as one of those abstract things like music where, you know, you read a book or look at a picture, you can see these are people doing things. But music and gameplay are kind of experienced on a more, like you said, ephemeral or maybe in some kind of deeper level.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining me tonight. It's been a pleasure speaking with all of you.
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.